This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Welcome back, folks. First and foremost, let me say that I am not unbiased as it relates to this next topic. I am a UNO grad. I am very proud of being a UNO grad. I went there 11 years part-time at night. I totally agree with Clancy Dubose and others saying that UNO is responsible for building the middle class of this region. Without UNO, I don't know that I would have been able to afford getting a college degree. I was on my own. I had moved out of the house. The deal with my parents was you live at home, we'll help you. You move out, you're on your own. When my dad set the rule, that was it. You knew it. It was etched in stone. And but for UNO, I would not be who I am today. And I can say that with a clear conscience, totally knowing everything that they gave me. Look, I wasn't the best college student ever, but I totally enjoyed the time that I had there. I had professors that were absolutely incredible, some who went on to be huge authors, some who went on to other successes, and I would not trade my time at UNO for any other place. It worked for me, like it has worked for so many others. They're down and out. And I want to do everything that I can to help them. I know Tommy Tucker feels the same way. He is a graduate of UNO as well. And, you know, so where this goes, I don't know what's good, what's bad. That's why we asked Matthew Willard, state representative from District 97, to join us this afternoon, and he does. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon, New. It's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
And I just wanted to make that clear to folks. I am not unbiased here. I don't know what side to fall on. So how did this come about, and where are we right now, and what does this kind of mean?
Well, I'm in the same boat as you, proud UNO alum, contribute a lot of the success that I've had in life to my time at the University of New Orleans and the help I received from the staff and the professors over there. But as you said, they're on the ropes right now, and it's not a pretty picture. Currently, they have about a $5 million deficit for the current school year. They have about another $14 million in long-term debt that they owe. And obviously, it's basically impossible to pay down debt when you have a current deficit. So it's not a good picture right now, but I think we have support in the legislature. We certainly have support from the New Orleans community. We need to rally the troops and get together and do everything that we can to save the University of New Orleans and make sure that its future remains in place so that it can keep providing a solid middle class and upper middle class for the greater New Orleans area and really for the state of Louisiana.
So I understand that a letter was sent by State Senate President Cameron Henry and the Speaker of the House, Philip DeVilliers, to the Board of Regents. I guess they're reaching out, well-intentioned, trying to figure out a way to deal with this situation that you just outlined. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. They're trying to do everything that we can at this point. Just for the knowledge of your listeners, you cannot transfer a university from one system to another system without the Board of Regents conducting a comprehensive study. It was done, you know, about a decade or so ago when the system transferred from LSU to the UL system. And so the request from President Henry and Speaker DeVilliers is for the Board of Regents to start looking at, you know, what are the pros and cons of moving UNO from the UL system to the LSU system. And I think we need that objective information, right? We want to know, hey, is UNO in the best place right now, or would it be in a better position if it were under the LSU umbrella?
Are we looking at things in a more macro sense at all? I mean, I think, Matthew, you recognize, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, that a lot of universities in that UL system are struggling.
Yep. So your question about the macro level, I think that's kind of spot on, right, Newell? The crux of the issue for UNO right now, the immediate deficit, is because of the decrease in student enrollment. So the fix right now, the fix long term, is to increase enrollment at UNO. How do you go about doing that? What is the best pathway forward? And we're hoping to get some of that information from the study that the Board of Regents puts together. I will say it's probably more attractive for a student outside of the greater New Orleans area, certainly out of state, if they were looking at attending UNO, if it was tied to the LSU branding. Well, that's probably pretty attractive. So that's some of the information that we're trying to hopefully get from the study that the Board of Regents will put together.
But it's interesting to me. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to know how many other UL campuses are suffering and we're seeing the same decline in student enrollment? And the reason I ask that, Matthew, is I had conversations with then-Governor Bobby Jindal. I also had conversations with the Governor Edwards about the possibility of, you know, and many members of the body that you serve in. Why don't we take LSU Baton Rouge out from under the state authority, so to speak, and state governance? Let them set their price. Let them do what they do. And let's move TOPS to the UL system and give preference to the UL system, so that if students are going to take advantage of TOPS, it has to be in the UL system. It seems to me that's one of the quickest and most reliable way of guaranteeing the future of these institutions. LSU is the only flagship university here in this state that can really set their price, right? They have the infrastructure to do so. They have the national prominence to do so. You know, and to not have and have a disproportionate share of TOPS go, you know, students going to LSU, it's hard for our other local colleges to compete against the flagship.
I think you're bringing up an interesting idea for sure. Not sure what the attitude, the appetite would be in Baton Rouge to look at
I can tell you there was no appetite. I'm not going to suggest that I convinced anyone. There was no appetite.
I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, but it does bring up a good question. You know, a lot of the universities throughout Louisiana are struggling right now. And so we need to make sure that they're receiving what they need to serve the community. And so that's part of what this study is going to tell us once the Board of Regents wraps up their work. It could be an idea for the Board of Regents to do more studies on universities throughout the state, you know, to see where we really are and if there are any changes that we can make to benefit the universities across Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like we may be finding a solution for one place, and what we may find out is that there's going to be others right on the heels of this one place. I mean, yeah, I'm hearing the stories. I'm sure you've heard the stories.
Yeah, and our universities, you know, come to Baton Rouge every year requesting money for this or that. Maybe they want to expand programs. Maybe their dormitories need a new roof. It makes the decisions easier for the members of the legislature when we have that data, when we can point to something and say, this money is going to this purpose. We have a study indicating that it will provide these tangible benefits. Obviously, for us, being in a position where we appropriate money, the more data, the more studies that we have, better informs our decisions to where, you know, we can make correct and appropriate decisions on funding.
So they will do this study. I guess they'll outline the advantages and disadvantages. Obviously, the money's got to come from somewhere. I just can't imagine for a moment that the LSU, the Board of Regents, are going to say, okay, this is how big the pie is, and we'll take a slice of the pie and help UNO out. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why the study is very important. I think a lot of members would have apprehension if we were to go into session requesting, you know, whatever, $10 million for UNO without a plan to show that that will right-size the ship, stop the bleeding, so to speak. So we need some information there. But right now, UNO needs a lifeline. And I think there's enough members in the legislature who understand how important UNO is to the state of Louisiana, to establishing and growing the middle class of Louisiana. So I'm very optimistic that we'll be able to secure whatever we need to put UNO on better footing while we work out the long-term plan and how we can save UNO.
Yeah. I got to imagine, too, that these tuition programs that we have set up in this country have not worked to the benefit of UNO in many respects. And in fact, when you have this university sitting in a city with five other universities, you have a lot of competition here, right? And as easy as it is to get money, you know, and the default rate is pretty high. You know, so a lot of people have no intention of paying it back. It's kind of interesting how this is all going to play out. And I hope the Board of Regents are looking at all of this, because I think I don't know that it's going to be any one silver bullet cause of this. I think it's going to be a series of a whole lot of things. Your thoughts?
I totally agree with you. I don't think they're going to come back and say, if you do this, you will, you know, return UNO to its heyday and all of its glory. I think it's going to require in-depth and thorough analyses. But overall, we're looking for, you know, an overarching theme, you know, make these changes. And we think that UNO will be in a better position to attract and retain students. Right now, the long-term debt is certainly a big concern. That stems from old costs associated with child care services that the university provided for faculty and staff, food service contracts, construction contracts, athletic department contracts, projects that were bonded out related to construction. And so that long-term debt is certainly a problem that we need to look at fixing. And I spoke to President Johnson last night. She thinks she's in a good position to deal with the immediate deficit. As you know, UNO has already did some layoffs and furloughed a lot of faculty and staff and consolidated departments. There's angst on both sides, right? The students, the faculty, the staff, alumni, everybody is I'm pleased that those actions were taken, but at the same time, we have to do something. We have to do something to basically balance their budget, and we won't. It's never going to be an easy decision, which is why I fully support this study that the Board of Regents is going to do. They have it up to a year to complete it, so I don't think we'll see any legislation this session to transfer from the UL system to the LSU system. But it's a step in the right direction, and hopefully we can get support in Baton Rouge to secure the funding that UNO needs right now to steady the ship.
What is the likelihood of interim financial assistance in order to do so?
Oh, Neil, you're familiar with the legislative process, so. but look, I think if President Henry and Speaker DeVillier get behind it, then I think we're in a pretty good spot, And yeah. I'm not saying that they're behind it right now. I've had conversations. Both of them understand the importance of UNO to the Louisiana community. So right now I feel comfortable about the position that we're in.
And look, I President Johnson did exactly what she needed to do. Math has no emotion. It is what
yep.
it is.
Yeah.
And the realities of it are the reality.
Yep. And it's a bad spot. Yeah. No choices,
No, absolutely. Well, Matthew Willard, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Truly appreciate you sharing what you know about this situation. We'll keep our fingers crossed, and if there's something that's going on and we need to talk about it on this show, please know that I stand ready to assist you to do so. As I said, I am not biased when it comes to this situation. I fully support UNO, and hopefully they're being able to continue to provide what they provided for me and so many others. I mean, just the list goes mm-hmm. on and on and on. I know so many folks like yourself, we would have never had a chance to go to college, but for the fact that UNO was there.
Absolutely.
It was funny, when this came up, I was recounting in a conversation what I paid per semester back then. I don't know that it would probably be 1/10 of the lunch plan. it was a hell of a lot cheaper than high school was. That I can promise you.
I really appreciate you. I appreciate you having me on the show. And if you ever want me to come back and speak about anything, just let me know.
Thank you, sir. Have a great week. Matthew Willard, Louisiana State Representative, District 97. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we come back, we'll visit with Alex Hammerstone, Advisory Solutions Director at Trusted Sec. Jesus. We will talk about the social media platform X was knocked offline and Elon Musk says it was the result of a massive cyber attack that he claims originated in the Ukraine. We'll talk about that and more when we return.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen.
Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. So on Monday, at least 3X outages took place, and Elon Musk suggested that a large coordinated group and our country is involved in the massive hack. And he said that they get attacked every day, but this was done with a lot of resources, quote unquote. He later told Larry Kudlow during an interview on Fox News that the hackers had IP addresses originating in the Ukraine area. Here to talk to us about it is Alex Hammerstone, Advisory Solutions Director at TrustedSec. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Alex, they say that these three outages took place due to distributed denial of service attacks. What does that mean?
Sure. So these are a pretty common attack that have been around for quite a while. And what it seeks to do is, just as the name says, deny service to an application or a website. And probably the easiest way to explain it is kind of with an analogy. So if you know, it's a nice day and you want to go get an ice cream cone and you go up to the window, you order your ice cream and you move on. That's kind of like visiting a website, right? You go to get a service, you receive the service and leave. But a distributed denial of service attack basically sends a ton of unrelated computers, requests. And so think of it as, 200 or 300 people storm that same ice cream counter, with no interest in actually buying ice cream, thus preventing you from getting your ice cream. So it's overwhelming the service and denying that service to other people trying to use it.
And are they utilizing AI, or what are they utilizing in order to do that?
So generally, to make a lot of requests like that, you need a lot of systems. And if you've ever heard of something called a botnet, so some of my very technical friends are probably listening and may take some issue with how I simplify these things. But in general, it's a network of computers that have been taken over in some way, not just computers. Sometimes it could be any internet-connected device, right? It could be a refrigerator with a web connection. And the attackers will control these computers and tell those computers to make a request to a website or to a service, which then overwhelms that site or service and makes it inaccessible for others.
So when Elon Musk says that the hackers had IP addresses originating in the Ukraine area, that doesn't necessarily mean Ukrainians are responsible for this, right?
No, absolutely not. And if you think about it, right, if you were going to go commit a crime, would you do it in your own car with your own license plate and maybe your company name on the door? Of course not. And so, if these attackers are using these botnets, those computers could be anywhere. And again, there's a saying in information security that attribution is very difficult, right? So knowing who did something, especially in the beginning, is extremely difficult. Sometimes groups will take credit for these things, but in general, it takes a while to know what happened. And, really, that seems very convenient, right, to kind of his views that that's what would be happening. But yes, I mean, it's the IPs associated with this are not going to be conclusive evidence of who has done this.
Well, someone stepped up and actually took responsibility for this, a group called the Dark Storm Team. They say it's highly likely linked to Russia and strong partnerships with other groups, according to Orange Cyber Defense. I don't know who that is, but someone's taken responsibility for it. But it seems as though he's like wants to shift the direction away from them towards someone else.
Well, certainly there are a lot of different groups out there, right, that do things like this. And, you know, in general, you know, when someone asks me why do people, you know, attack websites or steal data or what have you, the answer is almost always money, right? It's but in other cases, it's what we call hacktivism, right, which is activism plus hacking. And it's groups that are maybe do things to send a message. And when you look at denial of service, you know, it's not necessarily something that's easy to monetize, right? So it usually is done to make a statement. And so, you know, in those cases, if it is a group that's doing something like this to make a statement, you know, that can be even tougher to stop, right? Because if someone's doing something for money, you can shut down the ways they can make money from it. But if they're doing it, you know, for a cause, and it's a cause they believe in, it's much tougher to convince them to stop.
And obviously, Elon Musk's satellite company has been providing satellite service for the frontline soldiers in Ukraine. And he's gone so far to say that Ukraine would not have been able to survive in this war as long as they have without the benefit of his service that is the backbone of the communication system for the Ukrainian fighters.
And yeah, I've certainly seen those statements, and it seems like there are a lot of statements, you know, that are coming at us almost faster than we can kind of parse them. And, you know, certainly the ability to communicate on a battlefield is extremely important. And I think as we can continue and, you know, future wars especially, we'll see more and more dependency on this kind of communication. But you could certainly see, you know, why, you know, some of these public statements, there could be a group, you know, that is in support of Ukraine or some other group, you know, maybe doing this. But that certainly in no way means it's a country or attributable to certain individuals just based on that, right? You can oftentimes draw lines between any two events and groups, and they may or may not be correct.
Alex, you have talked about, I listen to your interviews with Tommy Tucker all the time. Very well done. And I mean, I've learned so much by doing so. This is not going away because the difficulty in policing this is so difficult that it's likely to get worse before it gets any better, right?
It is difficult to police in many ways, but I think the bigger issue is that, you know, what we call the attack surface is increasing. You know, so I'm an older guy, right? And so back in my day, you know, what was online, right? It was your computer, you know, you might have looked some stuff up or read the news there. But now just about everything is connected, really to almost a ridiculous degree, right? You know, your coffee maker might be on the internet, you know, people's washer and dryer, your car, a lot of medicine, you know, is reliant on, you know, internet connection now, et cetera. And so the ability to disrupt, you know, communications and disrupt any kind of internet connected device has a much larger effect on our lives than it would have 15 or 20 years ago. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons this will continue to increase, but one of them is just the number of targets, right? The number of systems, the number of products that are online now just creates a huge attack surface, you know, for people that want to, you know, exploit things to make money or prove a point or what have you. So I certainly think I'm not in the business of making a lot of predictions, but I think it would be accurate to say this is going to keep growing and, you know, it's going to keep us all very busy.
Let's go back for a moment. So when we talked about this distributed denial of service attack, in order to do so, how expensive is that? I mean, are we talking about a huge expense to be able to pull off something like this?
So it runs the gamut, right? I mean, something this size would be a pretty large network, right, of systems to do it. What's interesting is people talk a lot about the dark web, right, as kind of this nebulous, scary thing, when in fact it looks a lot like the normal internet. You just need a different browser to get there, right, to simplify it. And on the dark web, there's a lot of things you can buy, and you can actually rent these botnets. So you can go out and rent a botnet and use it for your purposes. And so really the price is all over the place, right? I mean, to do a small denial of service attack might cost a lot less than something of this magnitude. So I can't give you a direct answer on, you know, exactly what something like this would cost, but it certainly would require some resources.
But if you had groups within a country that were heavily invested in these botnets, I got to imagine they could pull it off relatively easily then.
That's likely true. Although keep in mind, too, is if you're an activist, you know, whether it's because a lot of things, right, that we think of as kind of being online activities have a pretty direct corollary to offline activities. So even in the old days, right, if you were an activist, you needed to finance your activism in some way, right? You think of people that are maybe out protesting, they still need a way to pay to keep a roof over their head. So sometimes these activist groups may, you know, dabble in other things to make money in different ways. And oftentimes they're very well funded. But, you know, I just think in these situations, we just have to be really, really careful not to point the fingers until we have, you know, absolute concrete evidence that it was or wasn't somebody. But certainly there are, you know, nations and groups that are very well resourced. You know, they're very intelligent. They're good at what they do. And, you know, are threatening a lot of the kind of different infrastructure and systems that we rely on every day.
And these systems that we have grown to rely on, they're so dynamic. I mean, for the benefit of the listening audience, I got to imagine that you're making updates almost on a daily basis to these things, right?
Absolutely. And you know, again, it's a lot of things that we see every day, right? I mean, it's, you know, we're surfing the web or, you know, TV these days oftentimes requires an internet connection the way we watch it and things like that. But also all these things that we depend on that kind of run silently in our lives. So if you look at kind of DHS and FBI and a lot of the alerts they put out in the past couple of years, a lot of their concern are around things like water systems, right? You know, your drinking water systems or utilities or things that actually affect life safety. You know, certainly we don't want our news sources to go offline, you know, for the day. But it's a much different situation than an issue with our water. And so the number of systems, you know, that kind of come into play in a conflict just continue to grow. And I think, you know, become more of a risk every day.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. This is a lot of, that's why I listen to you and Tommy all the time, because it's like foreign to me. You know, I mean, it's like I kind of think I know a little bit about how this works, but every time I listen, it's like I don't know anything about how this worked. And it's just I'm a dinosaur. I mean, I'm like resistant to this, right?
Right, but it's here, whether we like it or not.
I feel like it's got me surrounded. You know, and it's like
everywhere.
We're about to engage in the shootout at the OK Corral, right? So it's just like crazy. But thank you so much for joining us, Alex Hammerstone, Advisory Solutions Director at TrustedSec. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So, story in the Washington Examiner yesterday that an FBI assistant director wrote a letter to the Republican-led committee that was looking for a tranche of documents related to the FBI's inquiries into threats to school administrators, the pipe bombs discovered near the Capitol on January 6th of 2021, and violent extremists' alleged ties to a certain faction of Catholicism. And it also included material related to the FBI's engagement with social media companies about foreign interference in the 2020 election. Now, the Biden administration had refused to respond to the subpoena issued by the House Judiciary Committee, and this assistant director sent over the first tranche or phase one of the documents that were subpoenaed and said, as a sign of good faith, we are providing this initial production more than a week ahead of the committee's subpoena deadline. FBI Assistant Director Marshall Yates wrote to Representative Jim Jordan, the committee chairman. We hope that this level of transparency continues, right? Obviously, this was an easy one. It doesn't have anything to do with any of the existing leadership within the FBI. It'll be interesting to see when requests are made of when there is. But hopefully we won't engage in hypocrisy and we'll be ready, willing, and able to provide these documents when they are asked for. because we could put a lot of these issues to rest. I'm not so sure why we're hiding the ball. It's going to be interesting to see what these documents reveal. Phase one, it's there, and they hope to provide the remaining documents before the deadline that was imposed by the committee, and we'll see whether or not this actually leads to any further investigation and why they were so reluctant to hand over these documents in the first place. This has become common practice in to some extent relative to executive department agencies failing and not providing information subpoenaed. There's no question that Congress has the authority to subpoena that these documents. They just say no. The problem is there's no sanction, and it's so hard to get to that, and there's a reluctance to do so, and that's why it begs of this spirit of cooperation and transparency as we move forward. We'll see whether or not there's a smoking gun or anything in these documents that was important enough for them to say no. Sometimes I think they just say no for the sake of saying no, and they're going to show the other side what they really think of them, if there is another side. Quite frankly, there should not be another side. But that's always the challenge that we face when we're asking and requesting for information such as this. One of the first steps is taken by the new leadership at the FBI, and we'll see where this leads. We'll be right back after the break. 504-260-1870. Stay with us. Folks, we hope you enjoyed today's show. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
I'm trying to get over the shock this morning that Southwest Airlines is going to start charging for bags.
Next stop, toilets.
I know. This is really kind of shocking for a lot of travelers. You know, Southwest doesn't always have the lowest fares, but, you know, that's one thing that always, you know, made me feel good about flying Southwest is that you got your bags check free. Now, you know, you could be one of the special members on Southwest Airlines and get your bags paid for. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that. Rick Springfield has brain damage from a concert fall 25 years ago. And Luke Combs is suffering from a rare mental disorder that is all consuming. All of this brings up the idea that maybe we learn something about ourselves later in life. We'll talk about that.
All right, Scoot's up next with a great lineup headed your way. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you in the morning.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find The Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.